I love typing.
Mess with my Google Docs, Meeksy.
Supergirl Radio is going live every night of the week. How do you like it? Is becoming a human burrito a plus or a minus? I don't know. It does seem snug.
I mean, they say you are what you eat.
Kira.
I love that.
So I do a podcast called Supergirl Radio, and one of our segments is Lena Luthor, boardroom or ballroom.
Because really? She looks like a boss in this coat.
Nasty Luther, like a different Luther? It's not just Lena being mean?
No. Helen Slater here. So fun to know that you're hosting a podcast called Supergirl Radio.
Welcome to Supergirl Radio, your source for all things related to the character of Kara Zor-El. My name is Rebecca Johnson.
I'm Morgan Glennon.
And we are live and wired on the DC TV Podcast YouTube channel and the Supergirl Radio Facebook page to discuss and review the Tomorrowverse animated movie Justice League War World. And if this is the first time you are joining us, the reason that we are discussing this is actually Supergirl is in this one, but the previous Tomorrowverse movies, kind of, we'll discuss it. But Supergirl is not in a lot of these Tomorrowverse movies, except for the Legion of Superheroes movie. She's quite prominently in that one. But we are discussing these to catch up on all of the Tomorrowverse movies leading up into the Crisis movies so that we can get caught up for Crisis on Infinite Earth. Part two, because part one was very confusing to us. So we are, you know, I think it's starting. I don't know about you, Morgan, but I feel like it's starting to sort of gel. Like things, we're seeing things.
It's that starting are to come together. Yeah. Like that. This was the first one that I felt like connected well to the Crisis one. And we'll get into it in a bit. But I was like, oh, okay. All right. Now, because we see a little bit that we saw in Crisis.
We did.
In this movie.
Yeah. I think old Barry makes an appearance.
He does.
Yeah.
Pops up.
So we got to see some things that we've already seen from Crisis Part 1, but from a different angle. So that was an interesting take there. It took me a second to be like, who is that old man in that vision on the water? I had to remember what
I know.
So we're going to be discussing the movie. So spoiler alert. Well, I'm going to take the YouTube description from YouTube, because I think the YouTube descriptions are really robust and detailed. Some of the other descriptions from Max, this one is on Max. You can watch it on Max. But IMDb was kind of meh. So the best description for this movie was from YouTube. So it reads, quote, "Until now, the Justice League has been a loose association of superpowered individuals. But when they are swept away to War World, a place of unending brutal gladiatorial. Gladiatorial.
I don't think people use that a lot. But
took me a second. I had to break that word down. I think it's a gladiatorial combat. Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, and the others must somehow unite to form an unbeatable resistance able to lead an entire planet to freedom," unquote. So Morgan, I guess I kind of didn't have a lot of questions that I asked. I kind of forgot to put in the doc some discussion questions, but
did this one need discussion questions?
we'll just jump into a discussion of Justice League War World. And I think the one thing that I would want to ask you to start is, what did you think about the structure of this movie? Because it's broken up into three vignettes, I would say. Three shorter stories, maybe 15, 20 minutes long, of a Wonder Woman story, a Batman story, and then a Superman story. And then culminating into sort of a final boss, if you will.
Sure.
So what did you think about that structure and how the story flowed together?
Yeah, the structure was a little bit weird because, you know, you start with Wonder Woman, yeehaw Wonder Woman, as I call her in my little thing. She's a cowgirl. She's a, you know, standing up for the little guy. She's fighting Jonah Hex. She's shooting a lot of people in the face, which is my favorite part about Wonder Woman, is usually all the people she shoots directly in the head.
She also almost beat Jonah Hex to death. So
that's true. She thought about it for a second, and then she was like, eh. not worth my time. We start in there with Yeehaw Wonder Woman, and it's like, okay, all right. And then it just keeps going, and you're like, okay, all right. I thought it was called Justice League, and this is just Wonder Woman, but sure. And then when it switches over to Batman, you're like, ah, okay. I see what they're doing. The problem is that it switches over to Batman, honestly, because the Batman part is very bad, in my opinion. I struggled so mightily with the Batman part. I'm not saying that like the Wonder Woman part was like the best I'd ever watched, but it like had a structure like a story would. Like I could follow it. You know, it was a Wild West story. All right, I got that. When we flip over to Batman, things become very murky to me. what's happening?
And we'll break all of these down. But for right now, I'm curious about your structure. So we go from Batman into Superman. So did that seem to flow for you?
The Batman's after the Batman section, I turned to Mike and I said, I can finish this tomorrow if we want to just bail. just to give you kind of
what did Mike say?
He said maybe. The Superman section I thought was actually pretty interesting. So that's kind of what kept us going because I really liked the, like, you know, 1940s, 1950s. I guess it was 1950s because they're all like looking like they just came from the sock hop. Like the 1950s sort of like paranoid black
alien invasion.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of the Twilight. It was very Twilight Zone-esque, yes. And I liked that. I liked the vibes of this one. Now, I would say that this one, ironically, wasn't long enough. like, I was like, why couldn't this one have been the length of the Batman section and the Batman section just not been in this one? But that one I thought, but I totally... It was very weird to watch because it is kind of like you're just watching a collection of shorts.
Yes.
Until you get to the end of the Superman section and then it goes over to War World, which we'll talk about, I guess, later. Because I once again was my experience of this movie was like a roller coaster of high-ish, mediums and lows. Mm. So like I was like, oh, OK, this is not going like Wonder Woman is the kind of that part where you're like getting on the roller coaster and you're just kind of cruising along and you're like, this isn't so bad. And then Batman is like, whoo, right into a drop. And then and then you come up with Superman, you're like, all right, I think I'm getting this. This is not going to be so bad again. And then woof, down we are in war world. This one was a wild ride. And this one did feel like the most tonally like Crisis, where I spent a lot of it just going, what's happening? And I felt that really like that Crisis Part One feeling again once we got to War World, because I just truly felt lost a lot while watching the, like, say, what was it, like the last half hour of the movie, where I was just like, what? Okay, I know that they just said like 5 minutes of exposition. But I didn't get any of it. Like, am I not smart here? Like, I was just questioning everything about my life and like my education level and like how I absorb information. I was like, am I too tired to be watching this? Like, what's happening? The War World section was very confusing for me personally. I don't know what your experience with it is. Maybe I needed a background in this story. I don't know if this is like a story from the comics that like would have helped me.
I believe it is, and I meant to make notes about this, but I believe there was, I made notes about a whole bunch of other comic book connections, but not about the actual War World connection. But I think there was a storyline of the World War stuff. Let me see if I can look it up real quick. There's a Superman War World story, I believe. I don't know though if it's only Superman who goes to war world, it is hard to say also. So it may be only a Superman story. But here, I think they adapted it to a story for Wonder Woman, Batman, and Superman. So it does have its basis in the comics. I've never read it personally, but I think it is a story that they have adapted from that. So we'll break all of this down bit by bit. But I would say that you are not alone in being confused by the end.
That makes me feel a lot better. I just didn't care for the Batman section, and I was a little confused. It took me a while to be like, okay, what's going on here? The War World section was the section where I was like just questioning my own reality. And it reminded me a lot of the experience I had watching Crisis Part One, where I was just like, what's going on?
There was, to your point, a lot of exposition. A lot of things were happening. A lot of things were being said. So I can understand.
I felt like I needed to take notes. Like, I should have been taking notes.
I took notes, and I'm still slightly confused. I will say, I actually, one of the things I liked about this movie was the structure. I liked how it started off. Like, I would watch the Wonder Woman Western. I would watch that movie.
Yeah.
If that was its own movie, I would be so down for that. I would be totally into that. But I liked how it started from one of the characters. So it starts just with Wonder Woman. Then she rides off into some smoke, and then it goes to the, I think the world that it goes into is Shambhala. It goes into that place where the Batman story picks up. And in the middle of the Batman story, we find out that Wonder Woman is also in this Batman story. So they're starting to connect. Then we go from the magical existence of this this Batman story. Wonder Woman and Batman go into this magical portal, and then they end up in the black and white world of Agent Kent in the 1950s. And in that story, it's not just Agent Kent. Wonder Woman and Batman are also there. So I think I really liked how they sort of ended up in each other's stories to the point where they were all together at the end. I thought that was very clever. And I think getting them to the point where they could start to remember who they were, because in all these worlds, they're not really sure who they are, how they got there, what they were doing. So I really actually liked the way that this movie was structured. Now, some of the storytelling was a little difficult to follow, but I really liked the approach here, because it allowed them to play with genre and time periods and different looks for these characters. So I thought that was really fun. I guess since we should probably break each section down, because each section was kind of its own little movie in itself. So the Wonder Woman section, what did you like about it? I guess we'll go likes and dislikes on these.
Yeah, I loved Yeehaw Wonder Woman. I thought this section was really fun. I thought it had a pretty compelling story that they managed to tell pretty well in 20 minutes, which is like a pretty tight time frame. I felt like I got a feel for Wonder Woman in this world, kind of as like a traveler passing through who just couldn't let go when she sees the injustice. I thought Jonah Hex was kind of the worst in this one.
He was. Yeah.
He's not a nice guy. But my experience of Jonah Hex is mostly from Legends of Tomorrow. So I was like, oh, hey, it's Jonah Hex. And then I was like, Jonah, no.
was he portrayed as a good guy?
You know what? That's a good question. I think he was a little bit more of like an anti-hero in Legends. But he ultimately, I believe, helped them out. But again, it's been ages since I've seen the Jonah Hex Legends of Tomorrow episode, so I could be pretty wrong about that. But I remember liking him in Legends of Tomorrow. So it was fun that he popped up. He was a pretty good villain. I thought, what was the name of the guy that Wonder Woman was like, hey, how you doing?
Oh, so that is a character actually from the comic books. His name is Batlash, and I did look up some things about Batlash. I had heard of him before, but I had to remind myself who he was. His name in the comic books is Bartholomew Bat, in quotes. Aloysius Lash. What a name. He's a fictional Western superhero character in the DC universe. He's a self-professed pacifist ladies' man and gambler. Batlash's adventures have been published by DC Comics since 1968. He first appeared in Showcase number 76 in a house ad running in Superman DC, in the Superman comics. He had his own series, but it only lasted 7 issues. That is a real shame. I feel like he could really go for 7. And he's also been featured in a lot of Jonah Hex stories. So it was fitting that he was with Jonah Hex here. So I really liked Batlash. I thought he and Wonder Woman made a good pair. And I liked his he wore a little flower on his...
I immediately, when I saw his flower, I figured with a name like Batlash, he had to have been from the comics. That was a little too random for them to just come up with what are we going to call this character? What if we called him Batlash? It's like somebody in that room would have been like, that's too weird. Don't do that. So he had to be from the comics. But I immediately saw his little flower and I was like, I like his style.
Do you think that indicates his pacifist side?
I think so. He's like, yeah. I'm a lover, not a fighter. I almost, as my little subhead on the YouTube, I almost put Batlash fan instead of Yeehaw Wonder Woman. But then as I was coming into the StreamYard, I couldn't remember his name. Was it a conscious decision I made? I was just like, what was that guy's name? Flower. I knew it was funny. I thought that I liked that character as well. I thought that they did a good job. I also thought that they did a good job with kind of humanizing the people on the other side of the battle. You have the townsfolk. You have the the sheriff who's like, oh no. I was like, sir, what do you want? Like, she's trying to help. And then you have the girl whose parents are killed right in front of her.
The caption said her name was Cinnamon.
Cinnamon. Yes. I saw that. I was like, oh, that's a strange name. They never address it. We don't want to circle back to her being named Cinnamon. I felt like they with only 20 minutes, they established the world pretty well. Obviously they're leaning back on some old West tropes and things like that. But I think that, you know, when you've got a short period of time to sort of establish a world, I think it makes a lot of sense to be like, okay, let's like do the old West, but Wonder Woman's here. And, they're fighting for gold and stuff. I was like, oh, cool. I'm down with all of this. I like it. I think Wonder Woman should stay. I think she should marry Batlash. I think they should have some Bat kids.
Wonder Woman actually fits in really well with the Western trope. She already has cowgirl boots.
She does.
She uses a lasso. The Wild West cowboys would sometimes use lassos to, you know, get the herds or whatever. So I feel like Wonder Woman fits in pretty well, actually, in the Western stories. So, yeah, I really liked this one. And one of the things I really liked was Jonah Hex and his timepiece. That scene where he's like, have I ever told you the story of this timepiece? And I wrote it down. He said his great grandfather carried it through the Revolutionary War. His grandpappy carried it through the War of 1812. His pa had it during the Mexican-American War. And Jonah Hex took it through the War Between the States. I really liked his family lineage with this timepiece. And then I also thought the sound design was really cool during that scene where he basically says, you know, when the chimes stop, he's trying to, there's a power struggle between him and some other gunslingers in the town. And so he gives the other guys the chance to shoot him when the chimes on the timepiece stop. And the trick is that they kind of don't. I mean, they slow down, but he ends up shooting and killing these guys. But I like that he tricked them with this timepiece and the story that he told about how this was how his family settled disputes. And I just thought that was so Western, and it was so, it was such a bad guy move. And the sound design was really cool. The way the sound of the watch started to slow down. I thought that was really, really well done.
Yeah, and I love that they had a like an old-fashioned shootout too.
Yes.
Which is it's really fun. Like if you're going to be in a western theme, you got to have a shootout at a saloon. Like
yeah.
I was like they're checking off every boxes. We got horses, we got shootouts and saloons. We've got gold. I was a fan of all of it.
Yes, I really liked that. Was there something that you didn't quite think worked for the Wonder Woman section?
Oh, that's a good question. I didn't think it was like the best Wonder Woman story I'd ever seen. But I kind of just enjoyed it. I was like, okay, Diana's in the Wild West. What's she going to get up to? And it was like a lot of stuff. I mean, I feel like I could critique that she like shot a lot of people, but you know what? I had no issue with it, weirdly enough, because of the Wild West setting. It's like, what else is she going to do? Pew, pew, pew.
Also, in the long run, it's just an illusion.
Exactly.
Created by Martian Manhunter. So she doesn't really do all these violent things. It just happens in her illusion. But yeah, it is a Western thing. People get shot. Batlash got shot and killed. R.I.P. Batlash.
Okay, if I have one critique, it's that Batlash got shot. And that moment when he's like, why don't you stick around? She was like, huh, why not? And like, I screamed, Batlash, no.
That was really sad. And I liked that it was like a parallel of the beginning when the parents and the cinnamon, the little girl,
yeah.
When they come into the town, that's what happens to them is that the bad guys shoot and kill the parents. And so when Batlash is shot, it sort of reminded me of that scene towards the beginning of the story. So I liked that there was like a bookend of that, even though it was tragic and sad. I guess sometimes Westerns are like that.
That's true.
So should we hop into the chat and see if anybody has thoughts about the Wonder Woman section?
Yeah, definitely.
So Mind the Gap says Justice League Unlimited did the Wonder Woman section in a two-parter with Jonah Hex and Batlash. It was better. I do remember Wonder Woman being in sort of a Wild West situation on Justice League Unlimited. So if you're interested in that, go check it out. Really, you should just watch Justice League Unlimited all the way through. It's a fantastic show. So I'm not surprised about that. Mind the Gap also says Cinnamon was Hot Girl in a previous life, I think.
Cinnamon?
How do we know this?
Cinnamon.
Can you provide a source? I would like to know.
I didn't hear Cinnamon talk about being a barista even once. So I don't know if I believe that.
Quite questionable. Did we hear that?
She didn't even seem mad. Like she hated anybody and wants to kill them. Like she was in the last movie we watched.
Yeah, Kenny also mentions the Justice League Unlimited episode, saying that this is not the first time we've seen Wonder Woman in a Western setting. We saw Diana Western outfit teaming up with Batman and Green Lantern John Stewart in that episode. So there is that. Brian agrees with you. Yeehaw, Wonder Woman was terrific. So
yeah, it was probably if I had to be honest, it was probably my favorite section of the movie because it felt the most complete, like it felt the most like a short, whereas because it was the first one, so it was just telling her story. And then when she moves to the Batman one, you know, the Batman one also weaves her in. And I think I would have enjoyed the Superman one a lot more. But at that point, you know, we had Wonder Woman, we had Batman. It was obviously working towards the war world part of it.
It's so hard to say.
Oh my God. It's so hard to say. So I felt like it was like a little bit like we didn't get like a full complete story as much in that one. Or else maybe it would have been like a contender. But I think that the Wonder Woman section was definitely my favorite part of this movie. It just like, just love Yeehaw Wonder Woman, really.
Yeah, would read that comic, would watch that movie. So somebody needs to get on that. Okay, so let's move on to the Batman section. Clearly, sure. Your favorite part.
I love this part.
Tomorrowverse movie. So I guess let's do what we just did. I think it's a fair way to look at it. You know, balance out some thoughts. So what really worked for you in the Batman section? If anything.
Yeah, what worked for me in the Batman section? It was wild. There were dinosaurs.
There were.
I liked that there were dinosaurs. There were some fun side characters. I was a big fan of Ball Hand. He went too soon.
I think that his name was Machiste. That wasn't Machiste. Disintegrates.
No, that was Ball Hand.
Oh, the same guy. Yeah, so Machiste. Yeah, I couldn't remember if it was the same guy. Yes.
Yeah, Ball Hand, his big thing is that he has like a golden spiked ball as a hand. Mm. I liked how it helped him climb up the mountain. Very clever.
I mean, I don't think that would realistically
work. No, absolutely not. Well. You would die. But in this, Batman was kind of the worst in this one. And I thought that was a fun twist when he just left that dude to die.
He did.
Clever.
Yeah.
Mean for no reason that I could really just figure out.
Yeah.
Very brutal, but he was like, guess who's got the gold now? Okay, Batman. Geez, tell me how you really feel. the rest of it was a little incomprehensible to me, honestly. it's weird. It's like I don't know that I understood it enough to really even pinpoint what I didn't like. I was just like, what's going on here? I felt like the world building in this one was very scattershot, where it's like, I understand that it's like this different world that they're in, that there's a war, that they're all going after the blonde king guy for some reason. But I don't really know why. I don't know who, like the... We find out who's paying Batman to like go after him, but it was a little murky on like motives, even though they spent a lot of time monologuing in this one as well. I felt like it sort of did not, it didn't really sink into me at all. It just kind of passed the surface. I just kind of like let it wash over me. I was a little fuzzy on the details of this one. The action, there was a lot of action in this one, which was fun.
There was, yeah.
Actually, okay. I do have another good one. The Goonies cave sequence, I thought, was great.
With like the stuff that was coming.
All the traps.
The tricks and stuff.
Yeah. I was like, oh, they're going full Goonies here, aren't they?
I thought of Indiana Jones.
Oh, so yes. Also, yeah. Indiana Jones probably matches a little bit better. but yeah, I liked that whole section. I liked the chase with the Minotaur. I was like, oh, okay, this is getting tense. So I was into all of that. When we got to the action that was like inside of the cave, that's where I started to lose interest a little bit. I was like, there's a lot of action happening. There's a lot of, heroics going on. But it's taking, in some ways, it's like not really, it wasn't holding my attention. It felt like it was all kind of taking too long and there was just like too much happening for my brain to absorb. But I liked the stuff in the cave a lot. I was like, okay, I love a good like action adventure. Like we got to get around these booby traps kind of situation. So that part I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I think that's fair. So you weren't a big fan of Deimos. And him Deimos. Turning into a giant magical snake.
Yeah, the giant magical snake, I will give him, was very funny. I was like, oh, he's a snake now. That's sweet. It was very funny that the world seemed very primitive. But then this dude just hauls off and has a gun.
Okay. I think I should explain some of this world.
Please do.
Because they sort of teased it, but they don't fully explain it. So the gun, I'm saying, it like has a backstory to it. So the guy that Batman is teamed up with in this vignette is, his name is Warlord. And that's what he's known as in this vision illusion scenario that Batman is in. But his actual name is Travis Morgan. And he is a guy who gets to this world in a very peculiar way. So the Warlord is a DC Comics character. He is a sword and sorcery character appearing in DC Comics. He was created by writer-artist Mike Grell, and he debuted in first issue special number 8 in November 1975. Travis Morgan obtains the name Warlord as he fights for the freedom of the people of Skartaris. So if you heard the name Skartaris in the movie, I think they did drop it maybe at least once. So that's what that is about. So Travis Morgan is actually a Vietnam War veteran, SR-71 pilot, who passed through a hole in the Earth's crust, like you do, while flying over the North Pole in 1969. So obviously the North Pole is a time travel wormhole. So he flies over the North Pole in 1969 and landed in the underground world of Skartaris, a place strongly reminiscent of Edgar Rice Burroughs' Pellucidar. And I think Burroughs is a character that we'll talk about in the black and white world. So there, Travis, wielding his 44 automag pistol and joined by Shambhala's princess Terra, and later Queen Terra, became the warlord and fought villains such as the evil sorcerer Deimos, as well as various kings. He gained various sidekicks such as Machiste, Shakira, a Russian scientist named Mariah. We saw her in the movie. His magic-wielding daughter, Jennifer Morgan. In one story arc, Travis Morgan even becomes the U.S. president in the far future. So good for him. So
okay. Wow. Truly an impressive resume for Travis Morgan. Wow. That's a lot of backstory. I did not get any of that from
the short. he does pick up the gun at one point. Yeah, he does pick up the gun and he says something about like, this feels familiar. And then he remembers that his name is Travis Morgan. That's about all you get.
Yeah.
But it's kind of in line with the DC Comics version, like the comic book character, but you get a lot more backstory with his actual publication history. But I think what we're supposed to, this is what I took away from it, that the gun that Deimos has was actually Travis Morgan's gun that he brought with him when he, time traveled to this place. I don't know. That was me just reading into it.
I buy that. I think that does make sense. I was clearly supposed to be picking up on something about that character, but I spent like a good chunk of this section of the movie going, who's that guy supposed to be? Is that Mike and I were like, is that Oliver Queen? Like, is that supposed to be Oliver Queen? I saw in the chat that Brian says, I thought the blonde guy was Aquaman this universe at first.
I could see that.
I was like, maybe it's Aquaman. Like, I knew this was clearly supposed to be somebody from the comics and not just like a character for this movie. But I did not know who. And so I spent some time going like, is this supposed to be somebody? I'm like, I'm supposed to be recognizing. So it's nice to have that backstory.
It could have maybe been explained.
It was confusing during the viewing of it. But I feel like the backstory explains a little bit more about like what was going on for me, at least.
Would you like to know about Machiste? The ball hand guy.
I would love my favorite character from this short. Yes, I would love to know way more about ball hand.
So he is the wandering king of Kiro, K-I-R-O, in the other dimensional realm of Skartaris, land of endless sun. He met Travis Morgan when they both served as galley slaves aboard the ship Gear Falcon.
Ah, okay.
I think that's how you say that. They quickly became close friends and were both sold as gladiators. So they have a big bond because they used to have to go maybe into the arena.
He did seem really sad when Ball Hand disintegrated. So that makes sense.
They were good friends.
Yeah. He was also really bummed when Mariah flew off on that giant dinosaur bird. had we not even seen her ever again in the short, I feel like that would have been a baller way to go out.
It was. She saved all of them by knifing the, was it a pterodactyl?
I think it was a pterodactyl. Wait, was she not at the end? Or
she was at the end.
Yeah. Okay, thank God.
I think Deimos captures her as a slave along with the unnamed Diana Prince.
Yeah.
Who was also there.
Yeah, because you mentioned another character, Terra or something, and I was like, was she in it?
Yeah, no, I don't think she's in it, but it was mentioned in the comic book backstory.
Ah, okay, okay. Because I was like, oh my God, was there another character I just missed?
No.
Did they just look alike?
No, Mariah, I think, was the only like major female lady.
I think so. I think there was another female character who died in one of the waves of like all of the minions dying.
Maybe that was Tara. I don't know.
Oh, RIP then.
So, yeah, I think the strongest thing for me was in this section was the Batman look. I really dug his like mercenary sort of Conan the Barbarian look.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I really like that. His cowl gets destroyed pretty early on, but but he's got a, like a cool belt looking thing and some armor attached to it, and he fights with swords. So I like to see Batman visually depicted differently, and so I like that the take on that was true to the Batman suit, but very different. So it was weird to kind of see him with long hair, but I think the aesthetic of this world is something that I enjoyed, but I would say that some of it was a little bit confusing. Basically, I guess the premise is that Bruce Wayne is this mercenary who wants gold. Deimos promises him gold if Deimos will lead the warlord to him so that Deimos can kill him. And there's a whole situation where Bruce betrays Warlord and thinks that Warlord is dead, but Warlord is actually alive and saves his life. It's a whole thing. They also destroy the magical snake using one of the bullets from Travis Morgan's gun. So I thought that was pretty funny. Like, how do they defeat this magical snake? Just shoot it with a bullet.
Shoot it. Just shoot it. There is a part where... there was like a dinosaur like attacking them, and the warlord guy like picked up his sword, and I was like, oh, what's he gonna do, stab the dinosaur? And then he does indeed disembowel the dinosaur, and
lots
I was like,
of
you know what?
Intestines coming,
you know
out.
What, when I'm wrong, I'm wrong. It was also very funny because that like Batman was just stuck in a pile of dinosaur intestines,
it
and
was
I was
pretty
like
gross.
I was like, that's pretty funny.
That's why it's rated R, I think.
A little comedy in there.
R rating for that, and Wonder Woman beating Jonah Hex senseless. There was a lot of blood there, so that probably is what got it the R rating. Shall we have pinned to the chat before we go to the
I think so
black and white world, anything we missed?
Not that I can think of, but
Brian asks, is there a Travis Morgan Glennon
in one of the universes? There definitely is. I'm out there fighting a dinosaur being left for dead by Batman.
Yeah, so there is that. New Rachel asks, is this Deimos the alternate universe version of DEO agent Deimos from Supergirl? No, actually, that is a character from the comics that is associated with Warlord. So so this is the Deimos that's associated with his stories. So I don't think they are the same as the DEO Deimos character.
I saw a comment from Mind the Gap that said, everyone in the Batman section, as we mentioned, was from a series called Warlord, created by Mike, was it
Grell?
Grell. And Mind the Gap says, funny enough, Warlord looked just like Mike Grell at the time.
So he must have been cool looking. I think Warlord has a good look to him. So very cool. Well, thanks for sharing that. Okay, so let's move on to the black and white world.
Ooh.
That Clark Kent shows up in. This is our third short, our third little vignette story in Justice League War World. So, Morgan, what did you think about this 1950s world? Did you have things that you thought really worked in this section?
Yeah, I loved the vibe as soon as we got to this section of the movie. As I mentioned, the Batman section almost did me in. but then we got to this and I was like, oh, it's feeling very Twilight Zone. It's feeling very like paranoia, like who's the alien? I was loving it. I was like, let's go back to Roswell, baby. Let's find out what's going on. I thought the like the design of this section was really cool. How you go immediately into black and white. The sort of bottle episode almost feel of it, where it's just a bunch of people in a diner trying to figure out who the alien is. There's this sort of feeling of paranoia, which I think kind of works with like the 50s time frame and like the idea of like who's the alien. You know, they kind of talk about Clark in this one is he like an FBI or a CIA agent or something like that?
He just refers to himself as Agent Kent. It is his first assignment. And he and Agent Faraday, who I will also give some backstory to, they have been dispatched in this location on behest of Majestic 12, which I don't know if that is a, somebody look that up in DC Comics, maybe a DC Comics reference, on the behest of Majestic 12, a program that investigates UFO sightings. He does say that Agent Faraday is the founder of the Central Bureau of Intelligence. So I don't know if this is supposed to be like a CIA situation. I think the Central Bureau of Intelligence feels like a combination of CIA and FBI. So that could be maybe where Agent Kent is from, the Central Bureau of Intelligence, possibly.
Yeah, I thought it was cool. I really liked the setup of this. I like that as soon as he's going into the diner, we're introduced to Bruce, who is like I think he's just like a police officer in this one.
He is referred to as Officer Wayne.
Officer Wayne. So you're
he's Highway Patrol.
Highway Patrol. So you're like, okay, like we've got Bruce, and then you meet Diana in this one. So now you've got Wonder Woman. So you're like, you're okay. Everybody's together, but they're in this like black and white universe. And I like the, you know, the people in the diner starting to like turn on each other, who like asking who the alien is. Like the whole time, you know that Clark is also an alien, which is fun. And then his power is starting to like pop in when he throws the guy across the diner and kills him.
Not the first time that Superman has thrown somebody into a jukebox. That also happened in Superman 2. So Superman, known for being a real jerk and shoving people into jukebox.
If there's a jukebox around, Superman's going to shove someone in.
You better watch out. You better get out of that diner.
Get out. Also, I think it would behoove me to mention for fans of this podcast.
I think you should. I feel like I know where this is going.
Very special guest in this section, which I would have given this section an A+ just for this special guest. I screamed, "Oh my God." And Mike, who had been looking at his phone at that moment, was like, "What did I miss?" And I said, "Only the most important thing." And then I rewound it so that he could see the introduction again. It was our boy, a snapper car. Snaps for Snapper, everyone. Listen, he just got this job. He's not trying to lose it. I loved his vibe. Now, I am, again, once more, very angry because he did not snap.
He didn't.
There was opportunities. There was motive, but there was no snapping.
This was the 50s. This was the era in which Snapper Carr would have, like, the inspiration for Snapper Carr would have arisen from the guy who would snap on the TV show. I cannot remember exactly what TV show that is. I'm right also, off the top of my head.
I can't remember it either. I'm also mad that he never used the word daddy-o.
He could have. This would have been the time period. He should have used the word daddy-o.
He should have come in. His introduction should have been like, "Hey, Daddy-O, it's me. It's Snapper Carr." And I would have lost my... I would have automatically rated this movie 5 stars across the board. Did I like it? No. Did Snapper Carr finally snap and say, "Daddy-O"? Yes. Is that everything I've ever wanted? Yes. Also, yes.
We are easy to please.
We are so easy to please. And yet, every time... The man's name is Snapper. How do you mess it up?
His whole thing is that he snaps.
It's his only thing.
So Snapper is one of the 6 witnesses to an event that has occurred in the little town of Grover's Mill. So I was a little confused about this, and we'll talk about the 6 witnesses because I think they're all very important. We should talk about them, including Snapper Carr, who was the temporary weekend manager of this diner, and he really needed this gig, so he didn't want the owner to know what happened. So very important that he stays in this job.
Yes.
So I was very confused because Agent Kent says that the incident that they are here to investigate happened at 0700 hours.
Yeah.
Isn't that 7 a.m.?
That would be 7 a.m. Correct.
So how did they see strange lights over the town?
They must have been pretty strange.
Would they have been like really like bright and colorful or something? I
would imagine they would have to be.
Like it would make more sense for this incident with these strange lights to happen at night.
Yes. Yes, that would absolutely have made sense. And in fact, was what I thought when I thought they saw them.
I've watched it twice. I was like, did he say 0700 hours? Because if it was
that is 7 a.m. That is 7 a.m. If it was 7 p.m.
It would be 1900 hours.
1900 hours. Yeah, that's how military time works.
So I was very confused about that.
Yeah.
But so the six witnesses that have gathered in the diner say they saw something fall from the sky. And so they saw some strange lights over the town of Grover's Mill. So the guy who gets thrown into a jukebox, his name is Potter. He's a long haul trucker. Then we are introduced to Mr. and Mrs. Lang. Did you catch that?
I did catch that. Now, I was asking myself, is this supposed to be like Lana and her husband, or is this more tragically Lana's parents or grandparents
who are pancaked by the meteor?
Who are pancaked by the meteor? Like, do they? They're like, oh my god, it's our honeymoon. We're having such a great time. I hope no meteors ever, ever fall to Earth.
it's sad. She had a really tragic. Lana Lang had a really tragic backstory. Yeah. We shouldn't laugh about it.
No, and yet she mentioned it, so you could never forget it. But
she mentioned it. Lana Lang on Smallville mentions that a lot. You know what happened to her parents in that story. But yeah, so Mr. and Mrs. Lang are on their honeymoon. And then we meet a guy who calls himself Burroughs Ginsburg Kerouac, who is a drifter. And that feels like a fake name.
It's 100%. It feels very much like a fake name. Oh, like the guy who wrote the book, Kerouac?
Yeah, like Jack Kerouac, like, I'm assuming. Yeah, so he's a drifter. He feels like a fake guy. And then the last witness of the six is Miss Prince, who says she is a secretary and a typist. And this is definitely Wonder Woman in the sequence. And so all of these aliens, aside from Wonder Woman, turn out to be aliens.
Yeah.
So really, they are eyewitnesses to their own invasion.
So, I know. That was surprising. It feels like you would have... want to do it? It's a Bunsen. Oh my god, he's been very intense in this episode. He has strong feelings.
Really had success there with the ring.
He knocked it over finally. He also he was rubbing himself against this plant, this little fake plant, so much that I had to move it from my desk. Lest he knock it off. I guess it can go back. I had some questions about the alien reveal. I mean, I thought it was a cool reveal, like, oh my god, they're all aliens. But on the flip side, I was like, yeah, why did they stick around to talk to the authorities?
Yeah, they wouldn't need to. But I guess it was part of the illusion that these characters had to work through. I don't fully understand that either.
Yeah, I wasn't 100% there with that, but I like the vibe so much. My thing about most things is that, like, if you give me good vibes and like good character beats, I can really wave a lot of plot nonsense. And this one at least gave me like good vibes, where I was like, okay, I like what they're doing with this. I like the stylistic choices that they're making. Does it make sense that the aliens would have like stuck around and to be interrogated by the police instead of just going? I don't know.
Well, you know what they say about murderers, that sometimes murderers come back to the scene of the crime because they want to observe their stuff.
Maybe these aliens wanted to like investigate how investigations happen on this planet. We don't know.
Could be. I am going to have to put my charger in because apparently I thought I had it in, but the battery is low, so I need to investigate that. If you want to hop in the chat,
I will
see what they're saying in the chat. I'm gonna fix this charger situation. Okay, hang on a second.
No worries. I see Brian says snaps for Snapper. We need more Snapper actually snapping. Brian, I agree. I don't understand if the man's name is Snapper. That sort of tells you what his whole deal is. And yet so many things we've seen him in, never snapping, just never snapping at all. This one's really interesting. Mind the Gap said, and I mentioned earlier that this portion of the movie felt like a Twilight Zone episode. And I think that's probably on purpose because Mind the Gap says that this is actually very similar to a Twilight Zone episode called Will the Real Martian Please Stand Up? And earlier, Mind the Gap said, there's a literal Twilight Zone episode about a Martian in a diner. So I think that is That's really cool. So obviously that was a call out to that Twilight Zone episode, which is really fun. So, I mean, I feel like this part of the movie does really feel like it is a homage to something, and it makes a lot of sense that if it's an homage to the Twilight Zone, that it would be an homage to an actual episode, which I think is really cool.
So they really captured the genre that they were going for there.
Definitely.
Any other comments before I tell you about King Faraday?
I don't think I saw any. Just a lot of, did he snap? No, Rachel, he did not snap.
we cannot ever get him to do this. I don't know.
It is our burden. It is our cross to bear.
Okay, so before we move on into the last section, the War World section, I think this Agent Faraday is supposed to be the DC Comics character King Faraday. So in the movie, he has like a Purple Heart from Iwo Jima. He's the founder of the Central Bureau of Intelligence. He's the lead agent during the Janus Directive incident. But in the comic books, he is a fictional secret agent who first appeared in Danger Trial Number 1 from July 1950. So a long time ago. And he was created by Robert Knier and Carmine Infantino. His last appearance, so I guess he hasn't been in the comics in a while. His last appearance was in the 1950s. Last appearance in the 1950s was in World's Finest Comics number 64. But he popped up in July 1979 again in Batman number 313. He is named King Faraday by his father as a joke, a play on the phrase King for a Day. So he's an ex-soldier, so that would explain why they talked about Iwo Jima. So I think this kind of lines up with the King Faraday character in the comics. Actually, in the comics, he is a member of the Central Bureau of Intelligence. So I think they pulled that right from the comic book. So cool other little comic book Easter egg there with Agent Faraday. Okay, well, let's go out of the black and white world into the world of color, like the movie. And let's get to talking about War World. So what do you think worked about this section? I know we're really confused about this, but do you think anything worked about this section of the movie?
I struggled with this section of the movie. I liked that we got Martian Manhunter. Always glad to see Space Dad. He looked great. cool outfit, as usual. you can tell I'm struggling. This one, I felt like they had like a lot of plot setup that they had to do. And the way that they decided to do it was through long chunks of exposition, which you usually don't expect at the end of a movie. So that was surprising. They spent a lot of time explaining different aspects of like what was going on in the film. But through long monologues where I would like, halfway through the monologue, I was like, oh, am I following this? I don't think I'm following this. Like, it's long enough that, like, I was mentally questioning whether or not I was getting any of it. I think that's usually not a good sign. Yeah, there was just a lot happening in these sections. And I only watched it last night, and I'm already struggling to sort of remember what happened in these sections, which, like, as much as I ragged on the Batman portion, I remembered Ball Hand. I remembered the Minotaur. I remembered the dinosaurs. I remembered not Oliver Queen. You know, like, I remember all of it. The War World section was a lot fuzzier to me. I know that there was, like, Martian Manhunter was, like, in all their minds. And after that, I really struggled. There was a lot of people explaining evil plans. There was a guy who kind of looked like a budget Thanos. There was just a lot. Yes, that guy. It was like Thanos, but if you reverse the colors. There was just a lot happening in the last 30 minutes of this movie. And I was like, I didn't need all this. I don't know.
Okay, so we'll go through my notes and see if any of this starts ringing.
Yes, this is gonna help.
So, Budget Thanos is a DC Comics character named Mongol, and yes, I believe on War World, Mongol is in the story in the comic books. So it is no surprise that he is here on War World or controlling War World, because War World is. It's kind of a planet, but they describe it as an immensely ancient planet-sized weapon that's powered by the hate and fear of its prisoners. And so, Lobo calls Mongol the boss man. So he is the boss of War World. Also speaking of Lobo. Lobo makes an appearance in War World as a mercenary. He's not a bounty hunter in this one. He calls himself a mercenary in this movie, and he wants War World for himself. So Mongol's the boss. He's kind of running things, and Lobo's working for him, but I think Lobo wants to take over War World. So you mentioned that Martian Manhunter had been sort of living inside everybody's minds. This I was a little murky on. Like, I understood, like, he was a prisoner on War World.
It's really hard to say.
So hard to say. And so Martian Manhunter is trying to connect with Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman to get them to come and get him, and also free them from the being prisoners, essentially, with War World. So there's kind of two reasons that he's trying to get to them. But he says he lived inside Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman's minds for months. Creating the illusions that they experienced. But then he also says it took a dozen lifetimes to free the Trinity from their illusions and draw them to him. So I was very confused. I was like, so
I'm glad you brought this up, because last night, at least, I noticed this, because when you mentioned it again, I remember clearly thinking, how long was this then?
Yeah, because it can't be both months and then
A dozen lifetimes,
unless lifetimes mean something different.
Unless he's like a fruit fly or something.
I don't know.
My lifespan is usually only 2 days. So
I was very confused by that. Another aspect of Martian Manhunter that is pretty important in the movie is he's kind of like the key to destroying this place. He combines himself as a green Martian with a white Martian, and they become the key that sort of destroys.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Thank you. That is coming back to me now. Yeah. That whole thing. There's too much. There was too much in these last 30 minutes, because now you're introducing Mongol. Now you're introducing Martian Manhunter, who's been messing with their minds the whole time.
Well, okay. And we had seen Martian Manhunter in Superman Man of Steel way back.
Yes.
At the beginning the start of the Tomorrowverse. Started with Man of Tomorrow.
I forget. Was Lobo also in this one, or was Lobo in the Batman?
Lobo was in the. I called it Man of Steel. It's Superman, Man of Tomorrow. Is the
yes.
Movie. Yeah. Lobo was in Man of Tomorrow.
Yeah, Lobo was in Manhunter. Both Man of Tomorrow and this
because
section.
Remember, Lobo and Martian Manhunter both died in that movie.
I remember it was very anticlimactic. I was excited to see Lobo back. I, for one. big Lobo fan. Yeah. That guy's wild.
He's the main man.
He was the main man. In a sea of confusion during this section of the movie, Lobo was my rock. I was like, Lobo's gonna Lobo. You know what I mean? Like he's just gonna betray everyone and try to win whatever he can win. And I liked that steadying influence about him. I was like, I don't understand anything else that's really happening, but I love Lobo. The whole thing about the green Martian and the white Martian. Also, I thought a lot of the aliens were white Martians.
Yes.
But then, yeah, I thought so too. But then at the end, they were like, yes, I'm the last of my kind and you're the last of your kind. And I was like, aren't there like a bunch of him behind you?
Yeah, I definitely heard him say that he was the last of the green Martians.
Yeah, or he either said, like, you're the last of your kind, or, like, you will be the last of your kind. And I was like, what? I mean, a lot of things could happen, John Jones, but that doesn't mean that they're currently true. I thought it was a little strange. It was that whole section where they – and then they, like Captain Planet and with their powers combined and then turned into like one.
A literal key.
Yeah. Like a big Martian.
They did kind of combine to make like a super Martian.
Yeah. It was like kind of gray. and then they got like, they had like a little, I don't know. It was very strange. I was like, I truly now do not know what is happening.
So I think what I was taking away from it was that the super Martian key was trying to destroy Warworld, because Martian Manhunter gives a warning that I think is supposed to launch us into crisis, where he says that if Warworld fell into the wrong hands, there'd be major trouble. So I think, I don't know if Warworld is like connected to crisis. Is that like going to be a thing that reveals itself later? Is Warworld going to come back into play in Crisis Part 2 and 3? I don't know. But Martian Manhunter seems to think it's something that needs to be taken out. Another thing that was, I thought, a crisis connection was Wonder Woman recognizes Superman. And she says that he's, quote, much too young to be my Clark, unquote. And I remember being little confused about the Superman Wonder Woman stuff in Crisis. But then if you think back to Justice Society World War II, because I think this Wonder Woman in War World is the one from World War II. So she encounters a Superman in World War II because he saves the day at the end.
That's true.
But the Superman, I think, in War World is the Superman from Man of Tomorrow. So I think he's a different Superman. So that's why she has that little moment at the end. So I was like, okay, I kind of understand, like, which Wonder Woman this is and which Superman this is. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. I wondered about that line. I was like, okay it just seems like I was just shaking my head, because it seems like whenever possible they always make the most confusing decision, like narratively, like it's like no these are this is a Wonder Woman and a Superman from different timelines, and you're like, All right. Already there's like three different timelines in this movie. There's Mongol, there's Lobo, there's, you know, Martians becoming super Martians, blowing things up. And now you're going to just kind of gild the lily with like, well, it is Wonder Woman, Superman, but are they from the same timeline?
Well, I guess that plays into the Crisis on Infinite Earths.
Infinite.
You have to know that there's, because Martian Manhunter also mentions the multiverse in this one. So I think they're trying to like make it so that the different Earths of the DC universe are all playing together. But like, why couldn't Wonder Woman just exist in the Man of Tomorrow?
That's kind of my thing, is that like it's so unnecessarily complicated. Like, I understand when sometimes stories get complicated as they go along, or if stories need the complication for some reason, but a lot of the choices made in these Tomorrowverse movies seem like they're just adding complications for the sake of it, and not like for any kind of story purpose that I really understand.
But it's all connected. Yeah, but it's all it's a connected universe. Everything is
they're connected. All connected except that one Batman movie. You know, the one that was
the
good.
One that was good.
I do think it's pretty damning that the two that I've enjoyed the most are like the ones that feel the least connected to the shared universe, which is probably the Batman one and the original Supergirl movie that we watched.
The Legion of Superheroes?
The Legion of Superheroes, which is connected enough, but it's like, I don't feel like you would have had to have knowledge of any of the other movies to kind of just enjoy that one. Whereas some of these feel like you're like, oh my God, I'm lost at sea, man.
Well, that is a great segue to talk about Harbinger, who appears at the end of this movie saying that Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman need to come with her. I think, does she come through a Zeta beam? Was that what happened? Because Wonder Woman mentions a Zeta chamber.
She does. And I was like,
really sure what
I know about the Zeta beams now. I was so proud of myself. I know about the Zeta beams now. Like, I can hang, you guys.
We're such Adam Strange fans now that we understand all of that. But so Harbinger shows up. We just know her at this point as Harbinger in the continuity of the universe. So we haven't gotten to, well, I mean, we've talked about Crisis Part One. So we know that Harbinger eventually is revealed as Supergirl, but you don't know that here in War World if you're watching it through based on the release dates. So, Morgan, I guess, do you have any thoughts about the Harbinger at the end? I guess there's not really much to it, but it seems like she's gathering them for the upcoming crisis.
Yeah, I you know what? I liked it. It kind of left it off a little bit of a cliffhanger. It really leads it right into Crisis. So in terms of connecting those two movies together and getting you to want to watch the next movie, I think it works. And also we get that moment I forgot to mention in the Batman section because I didn't care for it. that we see, I think we talked about that we see old Barry, which is a thing that we see in Crisis. So we see the other side of that scene now.
Right.
So we saw like Bruce and the warlord.
Mm-hmm.
From Barry's perspective. Now we see Barry coming in from their perspective. So I thought that was pretty cool. And I was like, oh, that was incomprehensible to me.
We didn't understand it the first go around.
We were very confused. It was truly, it was one of the few times in this journey that we've taken where I felt like I finally understood bits of Crisis Part One a little bit better.
Which is the whole part of the project that we're doing.
I actually did feel like maybe I did need this one for that somewhat throwaway scene in Crisis. Now, did that scene add anything to either movie?
Not really.
But now I understand it is the important thing.
Okay. Do we have any thoughts in the comment, the chat, the live chat that we need?
I think we might have just spoiled Crisis Part One for Brian.
Oh.
Who says, Harbinger is Supergirl? Interesting. Yeah.
Yes, Brian, please go watch Crisis on Infinite Earths Part One. Sorry if we have spoiled you on that. It was a surprise to us, too.
Yeah. And when you do watch that, good luck and Godspeed. We were very confused. And I don't think I don't know that this journey has made me less confused about it. But we'll see during Part Two. I see Brian says, I love
a different Brian. Multiverse Brian.
I love multiverse stories, but this seems overly convoluted. I would have to agree with that. Mind the Gap says, as we come to the end of the Tomorrowverse, you see how many characters they turned evil and all the subverting expectations. It feels more like good riddance. There were quite a few characters during the Tomorrowverse that turned out to be evil, including my pal, the Green Lantern, Hal Jordan. Oops.
You know, I normally would be like, ah, but you know, I liked it. It was different. It was taking chances. It was throwing back to the Parallax story in the comic books. But I understand that some people would take issue with that. But I think for me, it's not as much of a problem for me, because I'm also looking at this like, oh, this is somebody else's take on the DC universe. Like the Tomorrowverse is someone's like shot at doing DC stories, and I'm like, this is how they see it. And so I just kind of go with it.
I see one from another one from Mind the Gap who clarifies my budget Thanos comment about Mongol, which is that Mongol was a ripoff of Thanos, who was a Darkseid ripoff to begin with. It is disappointing they didn't make an adaptation of the War World Saga instead, which is actually a good Mongol story.
So he was a budget Thanos.
He was a budget Thanos.
Who was a budget Darkseid.
Who was a budget Darkseid. One of my favorite things is that, like, the more that you get into comics or learn more about the backstories of comics, the more that you see that all the comic companies were just, like, ripping each other off left and right. And it's really funny how many similar characters they have where you're like, oh, so you both have like an Archer dude. That's interesting.
Well, I know the Deadpool Wolverine trailer, right, just came out.
I think it did. Yeah, I haven't watched it yet.
Both of those are ripoffs of DC Comics, where Deadpool is a ripoff of Deathstroke.
Yes,
even in terms of I think it's Wade. Is it Wade Wilson and Slade Wilson?
It is Wade Wilson.
and then also the X-Men was a ripoff of the Doom Patrol. So
oh my God, that's so funny.
So those are a combination of ripoffs of DC Comics. So
it's like,
congratulations, Marvel.
It's like a beautiful self-contained machine where they just like one rips off the other. It's just a circle. It's like the reduce, reuse, recycle symbol. Why come up with new characters when you can recycle old ones? Sustainability.
So yeah, that is pretty funny to know about. I actually didn't know that about Mongol, but that makes a lot of sense.
Rachel asks in the chat, isn't Wolverine supposed to be a ripoff of Timberwolf from the Legion?
He might be. I actually didn't know that, but that would actually make a lot of sense. I love Timberwolf from the Legion of Superheroes.
A lot like Timberwolf.
Yeah, Timberwolf has like the beard, and I don't know if he has the claws, but I feel like he's a wolf. I think he probably does.
Yeah, he's got like a whole, he's got a very Wolverine vibe that I could definitely see one of them being inspired, let's say, to put it generously, by the other. So that's very funny.
Yeah, so there are lots of ways in which both, I think DC ripped off some Marvel characters, so it kind of goes both ways. Okay, so Morgan, closing thoughts on Justice League War World. Was it a proper way to get us into Crisis on Infinite Earths?
Before I get into my closing thoughts, I did want to read this one comment because it seems to answer our Timberwolf.
Oh, yes. Let's do that.
Mind the Gap says to Rachel, yes, Dave Kokerum drew both Legion and X-Men, and he even said Nightcrawler was supposed to be a Legion member. So I think, listen, he was working on both. Sometimes you get tired. Sometimes you just think people love wolves.
That is awesome. Wolverine is a ripoff of Timberwolf from the Legion of Superheroes. That makes me so happy. Okay. So thank you for answering that question that we had. And then Morgan, closing thoughts.
Yeah. So this one was sort of a mixed bag for me. I think overall, if I'm being honest, I didn't enjoy it that much. I just think it was too disjointed for me. I thought that it, maybe I could have dealt with like the jumps in the stories and the different tones if like the story quality, I guess, had been sort of on par across them. But some of them felt like they were developed a little bit more, and some of them felt like they were developed a little bit less. Like I would have watched a whole movie of the Yeehaw Wonder Woman. I could not have gotten through a whole movie of Batman and Warlord unless Ballhand was in it like a lot more. And the War World section of the movie, which it's called Justice League War World, felt like an info dump, like something that was being done to me and not something I was experiencing. It was by far the weakest part of the movie, at least for me, in terms of enjoyment and also in terms of, I think, how it was structured. There was just a lot of information being dumped on you in a very short amount of time, which I don't think is that fun to watch. It's just like, wait a minute, hold on, let me check my notes. Oh, no, you're info dumping like a second new thing on me about the Martians. Oh my God, I have to write this down. It was just too much. They were just introducing too many characters in like the last half an hour of an hour and a half movie. It was the whole movie kind of felt scattered and disjointed in a way I didn't really enjoy that much. With that said, there was like some good parts of it. There were some parts I enjoyed. But I just wish they had kind of maybe gone back to the drawing board, at least for the last portion of the movie that's supposed to like pull everything together and wrap up. That should have probably been the strongest portion of the movie. And for me, it was by far the weakest.
Yeah, I would agree with you that the end did have way too much exposition and it was hard to follow. But for me, I loved all the little vignettes. I liked the different stories of the different characters and how they sort of hopped into each other's stories to get to the point where they met up and were able to solve the mystery of what was going on. So I really liked how it was structured. I thought some of the animation was really good. I liked the playing of the genres. So I'm probably not going to be as harsh on it, but I do think it did have some things that could have been improved storytelling-wise. So I will give you that. Okay, so I think because Snapper Carr was in this one,
yes,
we should get to some snap judgments. In the game of snap judgments, each person is presented with two options, but must only choose one. First instincts are recommended and explanations are unnecessary.
Our first snap judgment is better Snapper Carr reveal that he is an alien or that he is Starzar, the former sidekick who betrayed the Justice League.
That's a pretty good reveal.
It's a really good reveal.
Yeah. I liked seeing him in War World, but I don't think you're going to ever, like, nobody can top, like, the peak of the Snapper Carr comic book stories, I think, is Starzar.
Starzar is just such a good story, such a good twist. There's a robot hand involved. I just don't think that you can beat that, even though Surprise Alien's really fun. I think Starzar is gotta take it for this one.
I don't know if I can't remember if the robot hand comes later.
Oh,
that might be during his Blasters run when he becomes like a hero again and he's leading a team called the Blasters.
So maybe the robot hand is good.
I think so. But Starzar, definitely his villain turn. He at one point was the sidekick to the Justice League in their first appearance of the Justice League, helps save the day, and then later turns out to be a villain who betrays them.
Curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal.
It's the greatest comic book story arc ever in the history of DC Comics.
I mean, you heard it here first. I truly still think that episode where we went through Snapper Carr's backstory was one of the best ones we've ever done. I don't think I've ever screamed like that at a turn of events.
All-time great Supergirl Radio episode, our character spotlight on Snapper Carr. If you have I think if you listen to it, you'll understand why we love that character so much.
We went on a whole journey with him, really. And nobody ever does him right on screen.
It's so frustrating.
Someday we're going to get the Snapper Carr movie of our dreams. That's right. I said film.
What? You know, I don't think anybody's going to be able to do it as good as we can do it.
I
think we should just start writing that Snapper Carr screenplay.
James Gunn, if you're listening, and we know you are. We're available. We're so available for your Snapper Carr story. We have big ideas and we love him. could you imagine his dramatic turn to the dark side?
I mean, if there's a Justice League in the new universe, I feel like we can make it work.
You got to get Snapper in there. Introduce him early so his betrayal hurts. Okay, our next Snap judgment. Favorite version of Wonder Woman, Western gunslinger or secretary in a black and white movie?
I love the black and white aesthetic, but I can't go against the Western gunslinger. I thought that was so awesome.
Yeah, I liked her. I liked her outfit in the black and white version, but it is really impossible to beat Yeehaw Wonder Woman. I thought she was great. I loved her little Western outfit and little hat. The whole thing was great.
And I guess kind of going on the back of that, I'll do one more. So if you were going to be put into an illusion of this Ooh. Justice League war world, would you rather be in the Western illusion or would you want to be in the 1950s black and white Agent Kent world?
That's a tough one. I feel like both of them are pretty dangerous. But I think I would have to go with the Western because I feel like my odds are better. Yeehaw Wonder Woman is probably going to save me. Whereas if I'm in the black and white, everybody turns into aliens and then they all attack. So either I'm an alien, which is wild, or I'm alien food.
I think if I'm in the Western, I'd see, I think that's more dangerous because you could get shot.
That you're probably going to.
People shoot a lot of people in the Westerns. And there's probably a lot of like dysentery or something. Like,
yeah.
There's a lot more diseases back then.
You're going to lose some of your party to dysentery. That's just sort of part of it. Get ready to pan for some gold.
So I think I'm going to go 1950s black and white world. You know, I could really be into that, the diner aesthetic with the old cars and the hat. You know, Diana has a hat, you know, the hats, the ladies' hats from the 1940s and 50s. I love so much.
They're really cool.
So the wardrobe, the clothes, I'm sure that like the music was probably good then too. Some of the movies would probably be good. So I think I would settle into the 1950s. There'd be like medical interventions would be better than say like your 1800s So I think 1950s are maybe better than like the 1880s. So
right
world.
It's going to be a little bit better. You're going to have to duck those aliens, but I think you can make it.
Right. No judgments on your snap judgments. All right. Well, that is going to do it for this episode of Supergirl Radio. If you would like to contact us, you can post a comment on our website at supergirlradio.com. You can email us at supergirlradio@gmail.com. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and X, all at Supergirl Radio. If you like what we do, we encourage you to give us a rating and write us a review on Apple Podcasts. Supergirl Radio is part of the DC TV Podcast and Multiverse of Color Network, so check those out. Hang out with us as we go live and Wired on Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern on the DC TV Podcast YouTube channel. And if you are interested, we have a TeePublic store. So if you're in need of some new DC or DC TV related TV shirt, t-shirts, tank tops, sweatshirts, onesies, mugs, notebooks, pillows, or stickers, go to supergirlradio.com and click on the TeePublic store link at the top of the page.
And since Snapper Carr made an appearance in Justice League War World, we have Snap Judgment designs in the DC TV Podcast TeePublic store that we would love to suggest.
And you're not going to get these designs anywhere else. It is this specific Snap Judgments design is exclusive to the DC TV Podcast TeePublic store. It was designed for us by Comicer Girl at Comicer Girl, a.k.a. Sarah Luber. Awesome art design, kind of in the same vein as the first appearance of a Snapper Carr in the comics. So I think you should pick up some Snap Judgment stuff if you don't have them. I personally have a Snap Judgment shirt and a Snap Judgments mug, but you can get all kinds of stuff in the TeePublic store if you want to be part of the Snapper Carr fandom as we are. So definitely check those out. We would also like to thank our Legion of Super Sponsors for supporting the Supergirl Radio Patreon. These people are Michael, Anne-Marie, Yvonne, Nicola, Abby, Miriam, Nicole, Brian, Ethan, Danny, Majuba, Zachary, Annie, and Rachel. And if you'd like to become a Legion of Super sponsor, visit patreon.com/supergirlradio. And you can check me out online. I'm at various places. You can follow me on Instagram at the Derby Kid. I'm also on the social media platform Vero at Derby Kid. So a little different there. Also have a YouTube channel that you can find at youtube.com/duckmilkprod.
And you can find me on Twitter and Instagram at MojoTastic, and also as a co-host on the Legendary Ladies podcast, where last week we talked about the HBO Max, but we know it's just Max now.
It's just Max.
The Max documentary Quiet on Set about Nickelodeon. And this week we are tackling the very long new Taylor Swift album, which we did not know was going to have two parts and be 31 songs.
Oh my gosh.
So many songs. So we will be talking all things Tay Tay this week on the podcast. And you can check us out on YouTube at The Legendary Ladies, same on Instagram, and at Legends_podcast on Twitter. And you can also join our Patreon because we might be double recording this week. So you get, if you are a Patreon supporter, you would get the episode a whole week early.
It feels like if you have 31 songs, just make it two albums. Then you can double dip.
Technically, it's two albums. So it was like the first album she released at like midnight, and then the second part she released at like 2 a.m. or 3 a.m. or something insane. So it's, yeah, like the album is the first part, and then the second part is like the double album. But it does seem like too much.
That's a lot to listen to.
That's a lot of songs to listen to. I've been listening to the albums, but there are so many. I'm like, I'm finally getting a good hang of the first half, and then I like listen to the second half, and I'm like, oh God, there's so many on here.
Well, I'd be curious to hear the Legendary Ladies take on it. Well, that is going to do it for this episode of Supergirl Radio, but until next time, I am still Rebecca Johnson.
And I'm still Morgan Glennon. And remember, a good man knows that the darkness will always be there, but stands against it anyway.
McGurk! I love typing.
Do not mess with my Google Docs, Meeksy.
Supergirl Radio is going live every night of the week. How do you like it? Is becoming a human burrito a plus or a minus? I don't know. It does seem snug.
I mean, they say you are what you eat.
Cheer up.
I love that.
So I do a podcast called Supergirl Radio, and one of our segments is Lena Luthor, boardroom or ballroom.
Because really? She looks like a boss in this show.
Nasty Luther, like a different Luther? It's not just Lena being mean?
No. Helen Slater here. So fun to know that you're hosting a podcast called Supergirl Radio.